On today's show, we welcome Hilary Beale. Hilary is a goalkeeper who plays for Racing Louisville in America. She took a huge risk by moving to Australia last year to play for Western United in their first season. And with the playing minutes, that paid off, winning the W League's Goalkeeper of the Year award. She talks about her transition from college football to professional football, how difficult it was to be a third choice keeper, and why she moved to Australia for an adventure and to get some game time. Now back in the US, we talk about the successes on the pitch and off the pitch, life in Australia, and the long-term goal of potentially looking at other countries to play in after a successful and really rewarding experience in Australia. A fantastic conversation with Hilary today. She was great, and I hope you really enjoy it. So, hello, Hilary. Thank you for joining the Overseas Athlete Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Very excited about this. As I was just mentioning to you, so you're the first female player that we've had on here, which is great. And secondly, you're the first person that's come from outside Australia into Australia that we've had. So we've got a different view on the experiences now that we've had from our previous guests who have mainly left Australia, but you've come the other way.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I guess I could start with my story coming down there. But I grew up playing in the States. Started at a young age, played in our youth national team system, went to University of Michigan for 5 years, got my rights taken by Racing Louisville, met Alex Chidiak here, and I wasn't getting playing time my rookie year. So she recommended that I go down to Australia, put me in contact with Western United, a new team, and I guess the rest is kind of history. We were supposed to get ninth place, ended up being second overall, and then fell in the grand final to Sydney FC, but it was a heck of a ride.
Yeah, I know. It's because that was the first season, wasn't it, for Western United last
year?
Yeah. Oh, excellent. So the move came about, because that's always my first question for people is like, how do these moves happen? And to be honest, so far, it's all been through some sort of networking, someone you know that says, here, have a look at this. That's actually been the majority of how these things have happened so far, which is I've found interesting.
Yeah. We were at dinner and just having dinner in Chids' apartment, and it came about. She was like, oh, you know, you're a decent goalkeeper. And in my club here had mentioned that they would want to put me out on loan to an Australian team. We had no idea where I would end up, but Chids was like, there's a new team if you want to go. And I'm so grateful for her because honestly, you know, Western United took a chance on me. I didn't really have much experience, only collegiate experience, but it was my first time as a professional. So shout out to Chids for getting me down there.
That's fantastic. Hopefully she will be a guest on here as well because she's got an interesting story in a couple of different countries so far also. So with that, I'll go back then to the college. When I was doing a bit of research, obviously you went to University of Michigan for 5 years, and I could see that you had lots of playing time. So you obviously played all the time. How did you move from college to a professional club in Lewis Racingville come about? Is it part of the sort of recruitment process through colleges over there in America?
Yeah, definitely. American college systems is very different, I guess. For us, I committed when I was about 16, 15 years old. So in like a freshman in high school, I just stumbled. They come out and recruit you looking at events, and then ended up falling in love with the University of Michigan. I stayed until my fifth year because I wanted to be able to win a Big Ten championship. We fell short the year before, so we were able to do it my fifth year. But the year before I was supposed to go in the draft, but I decided not to. After the draft, for this year only, our rights were, if you didn't declare for the draft, our rights were able to be picked up by clubs. So another club had gotten my rights, and then I ended up staying out of the draft the next year because I knew another club had my rights. So if I could get my rights moved and get a contract somewhere, I was able to go. Other people enter the draft, but it was really unique this year. So then I came to Racing and then just trained the whole year, was like third string, and then stumbled upon Western United.
So for people that don't know, because I'm not fully aware of it, but what you were talking about there with the rights, what are they, how do they work coming out of college into, say, a professional setup outside of a draft?
Yeah, so I guess in our league it's really unique. So basically they have a draft, I think it's like 30 or 40 people now. Not everybody in the draft gets contracts. About the top 10 picks, most of them will get a contract right away. Otherwise, you have to go try out at a team. So through the draft, they acquire your rights. And then I think it's 48 hours after the draft. I completely forget. They have the ability to just pick up your rights. Other teams like can be like, oh, we want you to come try out for us. Sometimes you can get a contract in 2 weeks. Sometimes you can get a contract in 4 weeks. And sometimes you don't even end up getting a contract. So they get your rights, and then if you get a contract, you get to stay with them. If you don't get a contract, you go on a waiver wire and you can be picked up again by another club. But it's basically the right to have you come to the club, so you don't really get to pick.
Okay. Oh, really? So it's them. They're a bit in control of who they want, and if they pick you, you have to go and give it a go.
Yeah, and then your rights are tradable eventually and everything. So it's more of a business.
Yeah, and do you have, I wouldn't have managed it, but I wouldn't know. At that point, do you have yourself like an agent or someone that looks out for you, or do the university help you with that transition?
Yeah, so some girls will get contacted by agents right out of college, and, you know, agents take fees or whatever. Other people will get agents through their college coaches and their network. I'm lucky to stumble upon a pretty good agent, and he's helped me out with everything, so. I have an agent, and he manages me, I guess.
Takes care of everything. That's what you need. And I mean, like when it's all new like that, and I suppose moving from university into like a professional environment, there must be so many things that are going on that you wouldn't understand because it's all new to you. So the importance of having someone you can trust, I guess that's the big thing because there's a lot of cowboys out there, but having someone you can trust that you believe has your best interests at heart is so important.
Yeah, I think too, I don't know if a lot of people know how the NWSL works, but it's honestly it's a pretty difficult process. There's even when you get into contract negotiations, there's some things that I didn't know until after I signed my contract, like, there's guaranteed contracts and not guaranteed, where you could be dropped at any day, given day. So that's a lot, like being able to be in an environment, you know, where you feel comfortable, I guess, but also still being pushed. But it's a little bit different than other leagues. So I think the agent's really helpful in helping you navigate the different rules of the leagues, and especially in our league, since it is quite a business, like making sure you're in a good place.
I think that's like American sports in general, isn't it? It can be a lot of paperwork and a lot of contract or little asterisks beside things that could trip you up. You know what I mean? Like it's something that, as you say, you might not find out till it's too late.
Yeah, it's pretty cutthroat too, I would say. I guess we're fortunate in a way, but also it's pretty hard just the amount, it takes so much to be able to become a professional here because it is so competitive and there are so many people in this country, especially with soccer now, that play. There's only, I think, like 250 people in our league. So it's a pretty small, small number for our population, 1%.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? It is. It would be cutthroat. And like that, you've got, I suppose, because a lot of people are going through the college system, and you've got such good facilities over there, like everybody's sort of fitness levels and conditioning and, you know, strength work, everyone will have it because you've gone through that process in university. So as you say, it makes it even harder to get to the top in a situation.
Yeah, like that. And I think that's something I realize as well going from the US to Australia. I think like the Americans tend to be a little bit ahead of the game in terms of like strength and conditioning, but I also think it's pretty cool in Australia that you can be 18, you know, you have like the Dos Santos girls that are 16 or something playing with professionals. So, you know, it's it's give and take whether you like the things like that. But I think it's unique in terms of every country. You know, you have younger professionals, but a lot of us go to college first instead.
Yeah, it's the American dream, isn't it? It's that pathway of going to high school, going to college, and then moving on from there.
Yep.
So the move then to racing, just to touch on that, as you said before, you went there as a third string. Was that, what you sort of touched on, you don't really have a choice, but they picked you for that just because you've come out of university. Did you have some really experienced goalkeepers ahead of you?
Yeah, we had some. I mean, we have Katie Lund. She's pretty good. She's our first string. And then there was another girl and I had gotten hurt in the beginning of the year. And I think just adjusting, you don't really realize it here, especially the gap between professional and collegiate is so big because there's so many colleges that people come from, and I think there's probably about three or four that really have a professional environment. And those are just like, they're the soccer, you know, the UNCs, the FSUs that people around the world know about. But there's other great universities like that. Yeah, they have good players, but you know, only one or two are going professional, and the environment isn't as cutthroat as some others. So, I loved my university. I wouldn't change anything. But we also had a pretty good class. But yeah, it's definitely a jump from university to professional, I would say. I think on average, most like one or two girls from probably 30 go professional from the top 20 schools.
Yeah, so again, a very small percentage. And what was the biggest challenges you found when you went from you know, college to racing?
I think managing my body, honestly. You know, in college I was so used to going 6 a.m. to 8:30 in the morning, going to class, going back to the weight room, and then not getting as much sleep. But then you come here and there's girls that are 32 years old and their knowledge of the game is pretty amazing. And then they also manage themselves in terms of, we're in the facility for 5-6 hours a day. It's a 24/7 job. You know, what you eat, what you're drinking, what you're doing in your off time is just as important as what you do on the field and in the gym. So I think that for me was a big adjustment, is being a professional and the little things, your approach before training, we're in the gym for 30 minutes working on activation, after training you're in the gym again. So I think that, and managing my body, because I like to go do things, but I realize quickly that I can't be doing things 24/7.
Did you start when you got into racing, did you pick up any injuries, like little sort of niggles here and there, just due to the difference in the training schedule?
I think I was trying to find a balance of, you know, closing the gap in terms of even strength wise. I remember my first training, I got shoved off a ball and I was like, whoa, there's no way. but just trying to find a way to close the gap and doing extras in terms of fitness. I've gotten so much fitter since I've been here. But I was in the gym an extra day every week because I wasn't playing. So it's finding ways that you can make gains, but also being available. And I think last year I would say I was maybe pushing myself too much. And I learned a lot about just with response from my body. After that, it hurt my back a little bit and some other things. So then I was like, you know what, I need to find a balance. And so I picked up yoga. I started like eating better, making sure I get a certain amount of sleep every day and things like that, because now like that's the 1% that you can take you can take in, and that's how you make the small gains. It doesn't happen overnight, it takes time.
Yeah, you're right. I know, starting that, like a new eating habit, for instance, you're not going to see the difference straight away and you're like, oh, I hope this works.
Yeah.
I hope this works. But it does take time, and I suppose it's getting into that routine. And did the club help with that? Like at that level, do they have nutrition sort of plans for the players?
Yeah, we are really fortunate here at Racing Louisville. We have our own chef, and we have breakfast and lunch served every day. So we come in at like, I don't know, around 8 o'clock, and breakfast is there for us. It's all, they consult a nutritionist. We have access to a nutritionist if we want it. And then we have lunch there as well. So that's two meals that are totally covered. I've always been pretty good at cooking and eating for myself, like outside. So I just like hone in on that. But I think for me, like the recovery side of things, because we don't train as long as we did in college, but the training is so intense, and it's mentally too, I think, is a big adjustment of, you might have one bad day, but you can't let one bad day turn into four bad days, because that's when, you know, things go up in the air. But it's just maintaining a mental stability of like being able to have a short-term memory and forget about the one bad day, but maybe have four good days and one bad day. So keep the ratio good.
And on that point of view, do they also help you with the sort of mentality and, I guess, psychology of becoming a professional and managing your emotions like that from a good day to a bad day?
Yeah, we have access to a sports psychologist here. I mean, last year was a tough year for me. I unexpectedly lost my grandfather in the midst of my rookie year. So that took a toll. And I think for me, it was kind of like that really brought me down for a little bit. And then I think I started to find my purpose, like, because I was bummed that he never got to see me make my professional debut. So I really wanted to be able to play for him. I had access to the sports psych, and they're also regular psychologists. So that, in terms of the club, we're pretty supportive here in the mental aspect as well.
And you found that really helped?
Yeah, I did. I think it allowed me to have a new perspective, and especially as a rookie, you have these high expectations, but it is a reality check in terms of where you are with your game. Being able to talk to somebody and understand that what you're going through is normal. It's not just you being crazy.
And do you find a lot of the players utilize that?
Yeah, now? I think so. I think we all know it's accessible to us, and it's good to know that it's there and that, you know, you have that resource. I think, I don't know how it is in other parts of the world, but just having access to that, I think our job is also to, it's measured on how you do every day, not what you do. So it can be mentally exhausting and taxing sometimes.
No, definitely. I heard, and I mean, this goes back years and years, but one of the New Zealand rugby players for the All Blacks, I heard a podcast with him a few weeks ago, and he said 20 years ago, if you walked in to speak to a sports psychologist, people would wonder what was wrong with you. Whereas nowadays, he said, if you don't go in and speak to your sports psychologist, people wonder what's wrong with you. Like, there's a big shift in people being open and, I guess, you know, wanting that help and not being afraid to ask.
Yeah, I would agree. I would even see the shift from when I was a kid. It wasn't talked about until I was about 16. And then now seeing it, that they have the resources at every college. I mean, you even hear teenagers having access to it. So I think that's a big resource. And I always, when I was a kid, I always, like Kobe Bryant always said that he's somebody I look up to. Like, when you get to the level of being a professional, the physical side of it is so easy, but it's the mental side that is the most taxing piece. And I was always like, oh yeah. Like, I got the mentality in the bag. But, you know, as you develop and there's other things going on in your life, you realize that is one of the bigger side of the game is, I think, is the mental side and how you can keep a level head throughout the highs and lows and, you know, not have too many dips in performances, but maintain a steady state.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And like, I see a lot of his clips still, you know, flicking through Instagram all the time. And it's so true. I believe that, like, when you get to that level, whatever sport it is, everyone's pretty much on a you know, give or take a level playing field in regards to physicality and conditioning and speed and strength, because you've got access to it all. And that's where I think that mentality of that little 1% is here or there, or if you can get help to clear your head, or as you say, keep the dips few and far between and try and keep as steady as you can and consistent, makes a huge difference.
That's something that I've learned a lot.
Yeah, that's good. That's good you've learned that while you're young and you've still got, you know, lots of years ahead of you.
Yeah, totally.
So we'll jump on to the Australian journey.
So how, obviously it came about through Alex and her sort of conversation, but how did the conversation with the club go, or the negotiations around it? Because as you said, at that time you weren't getting game time. So was this a choice from you to say, I need game time? And why would they loan you to Australia and not maybe somewhere else in America?
Yeah, obviously they loaned me to Australia because actually the, I think it used to be the W League, was somewhere that,
yeah,
like Aubrey Bledsoe just got done playing with the or just finished up her World Cup. Sofia Huerta, Jess McDonald, all these players that have been on the national team, they always came in their off season when they were really young to get game time, because it's our off season is their season. So the W League used to be the place to play. Now the A League has extended their season and they cross over a little bit. But my club was like, yeah, like we want to go see you get games. It'll be good for your confidence. So Chids put me in contact with them. I had an hour-long FaceTime with Mark Turcasso just to chat football and see if it was a good match. I think he liked me after that. So I got my agent in contact with them and then agreed to paperwork. But it's always been kind of a place where the A-League is somewhere where a lot of Americans jumpstart their career. A lot of, I think, majority of our national team at some point have gone down to Australia and played. And honestly, word on the street in the U.S. is that Australia is like one of the best places to go in the off season, and it's pretty enjoyable. So I took a chance on it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's good to hear. I did see that actually, and I know what you say about extending the season, because do your seasons run from March to October in the NWSL?
Yeah, we start our preseason now February 1st, and the A-League goes about October, I think 15th, they just announced today, is the kickoff until we ran until May. So there was a little bit of a crossover, but for somebody like me, it was worth taking a chance on.
And that was the main goal for you, just to get actual playing
minutes? Yeah, it was kind of, we didn't know how well my team was going to do. If I was on loan, so I could be recalled at any time. If we were to not do well, I probably would have been recalled earlier, but we did really well, so they let me stay for the championship.
And how did you go around the, I suppose, the a little bit behind the scenes of the move? So your agent took care of it, but and your club obviously supported it because they've got you on a contract. They want to see you develop, obviously. So sending you out into Australia is a good move for them and a good return on their investment if you come back with a lot of playing time. But what did you have to do in regards to, say, you're going to leave the country for, you know, roughly 6 months? From a visa point of view or a paperwork point of view, what did you have to go through yourself?
Yeah, well, first I had to tell my parents. I didn't really tell them until it was kind of agreed upon. but yeah, the club just said, here you go. My agent was like, okay, sign this contract. Western put together my visa. I arrived with my visa, and then it just had to get... I said I had to sign to be able to get my full visa, so I finally got my full visa when I got there. But I honestly didn't have to do too much. It's a pretty easy process. But honestly, I don't know how other people's experiences were with their club, but I think Western United ran a pretty smooth ship. My agent did his job, and the club here did their job as well to make sure my paperwork was all okay and everything.
So nothing too much that you had to stress about apart from telling
them. Yeah, just apply for my visa, but it was just a couple questions.
Oh, that's cool. And so you flew straight to Melbourne?
Yeah. So our season ended. I think I got there. I want to say I left like October 11th or 12th. I went home for a week. My club, like once our season wrapped up, they allowed me to get home pretty quickly. You know, I went home for a week, said my goodbyes, and then arrived in Melbourne for our 6 week preseason. But I flew from LAX to Brisbane on like a 14-hour flight. It wasn't fun, I'm not gonna lie. And then I got to Brisbane and took like a 2-hour flight. So
it's a long way. How did you deal with that side of it? Obviously, getting there, getting into training, but no doubt struggling a little bit with jet lag.
Yeah, luckily I got there at midnight, and honestly, I went to bed fairly quickly. I would say it only took me a few days because I just wouldn't nap during the day, and I had a couple days because I had to do physicals and everything when I got there, so I had like 3 days to adjust, but it wasn't too bad because I got there late at night. I didn't really sleep much on the flight because I was so excited, and then I just didn't nap during the day.
And how did you find the level of the training, like coming from where you'd come from in racing to Western United? What were the main differences you found, I guess, straight away, or what sort of struck you instantly?
Yeah, the A-League is a little bit different in terms of it's a good league, don't get me wrong, but like people have to work two jobs. Our league is a little bit older, so like it's a full-time job here for us. We come in at 8 and we leave like at noon sometimes, but sometimes like 2:30 depending on how many meetings you have. So ours is like you're fined. It's a pretty tight ship here, and speed of play is everybody's a seasoned professional. It's a top league, and I think for the A League, like these girls work two jobs. Some of them, this is their first time in a professional setting. We have a little bit more structure in university, so credit to the girls working two jobs. But I would say, like, just the structure of things is a little bit different. I think ours is, it is a business. So, like, it's run like a business, you know? You do your job, and I think the A-League is developing into that, but I think it is a little bit more relaxed in terms of, like, structure of things. Because girls have other jobs. This isn't their full-time job. So, I think that's the big difference. But I honestly think...
So, for you... Sorry, just on that. So for you then at racing, you're on a full-time salary. You didn't have to work anywhere else. When you came to Melbourne, was it the same? Did you have a good enough contract that that's all you had to do?
Well, I couldn't work with my visa. I had a decent contract because I was on loan and I had my housing and a car. But if I could have worked, I probably would have worked. Let's just say that. But, you know, it's different. You're in for 2 hours a day. Like we would get in at 7, I think. Leave the house by 6:30 and be done by like 10 on a long day, 10:30. So I think that's a little bit different in its own way. But yeah, you're not, it's not like, and you're paid 9 months of the year, but here you're paid year round.
So then on that, I guess an added, not stress, but an added job that you have to do is probably look a lot more after your own nutrition and fitness. If you're only in there 2 hours a day, you're probably on the pitch for most of that. Whereas, as you said before, you've got chefs cooking your breakfast and lunch. So over here now, the girls, you know, yourself and the other girls in the A-League women's, they've got a lot of other things to juggle in between to get that level of professionalism to eat well, sleep well, and condition themselves while working another job.
Yeah, that's totally it. I mean, like, the difference is you have a toaster machine and an espresso machine, some milk and some bananas and Nutella and Vegemite, I guess, in the locker room down in Australia. But, like, we have a full fruit bar. We have omelets to order, potatoes, American breakfast, but... we have all that just handed to us, and I think that is, like, really appealing to players. Another thing, too, is, like, we have housing. Just it's not a part of our salary cap. We all live in team housing, so we don't have to pay for our housing, which is great here. And that makes it so much easier to be able to be by the facility. And, like, just in terms of your everyday life, it just makes everything simple. Like, I have a roommate on my team. But we have our own bedroom, own bath, and just things like that. I think that helps for a professional setting. They know where you're living. They know what you're eating. And, like, it's your full-time job. That's what you're expected out of you. But they set you up to do that.
I was just going to say that. They give you all the tools to focus solely on your football. Like, there's no other excuses. They do everything for you so that over there in America, that's your job. You train. You work hard, you perform, Whereas over here, yeah, it's very different. You must have had probably not yourself, as you said, you had a contract there that you could do it, but the girls must find it quite tough to see the difference in levels there.
Yeah, I mean, we even had a couple girls on our team. One worked for football, Victoria. One worked for as a teacher, and another thing too is like we all don't live with our families once we go to college. A lot of people in Australia live with their families. So, like, it's nice, but at the same time, I feel like for us, being able to live alone is, this is your sole focus, what you guys are eating, like, what we're doing off the field, and our families aren't involved as much. Like, you have a bad day, there's no one really, other than your roommate, to pick you up. But it is, like, being independent. I think that's a big thing here as well. That makes it more of a professional environment.
No, definitely. Yeah, no, a lot of challenges, no doubt. So when you came here to Australia, did the club sort you out with accommodation and a car, did you say?
Yeah, so we lived in a team house. We honestly had it pretty nice. We had a pool and a tennis court, so that was a pretty cool house. I lived with three of my other teammates. At first we had one car, but it didn't really work out very well, so we ended up getting another car because it was just four people and one car was not going to do it when we all went separate ways.
Well, as you say, if you're only in training for 2 hours a day or, you know, a couple of hours, yeah, there's a lot of spare time to be doing other things.
Yeah. And there was three internationals, including myself, and then one girl that was from New South Wales and moved down. So it was nice. I think it was definitely different. Like, because we had never met and we didn't really set up who we lived with, but it was cool to get to know new people. The house was pretty big, so it made it easier.
Did that help having just other internationals there as well? Just for yourself being, like, obviously you're used to being independent, but being far away from home this time?
Yeah, I think it helped. I think it was a little bit different here where none of us are really from Kentucky, so we all live in the same building. And so it makes it really easy to go hang out, get to know my teammates. But I think in Australia, when you live sometimes in a house full of internationals, you feel a little bit separate from the culture. But at this, because you're not like living in it. I was living with other Americans, and we outnumbered the Aussie that was in the house. So I think that was something. But it was an English speaking country. One girl had played there before, so that was nice.
Yeah, I was going to say that's one of the easiest things coming to an English-speaking country, no doubt, makes things a lot easier. But was there any other, I guess, cultural differences that you found, or just day-to-day living that was blew your mind, or you were like, this is really cool, I like Australia?
Driving on the opposite side of the road, that, I'm not going to lie, like, I was shocked they gave us a car because I was driving on the wrong side of the road for the first week, and parking lots I still suffer with. But no, I think the tables, like going to a restaurant and learning how to sit at a table, we're seated by a host here and handed the bill. We don't ask for the bill. That was another thing. But, no, I think the culture of like Australia has a pretty good balance of work and life. It's a little bit different than here, but I think just like you can go to a cafe and just have a good cup of coffee anywhere. Here you have to go find a good local coffee shop. But also just how earthy, I grew up in California, so like how earthy Australia is. I thought it was cool. You guys look after the environment and everything.
Yeah, Melbourne is very well known for its coffee. It's a very
so
good
coffee.
And so on the pitch, obviously you had fantastic season, like you, as you said, you came second, you made the grand final, and you also won goalkeeper of the year.
Yeah, that was honestly a cherry on top. If you would have told me a year ago that I would have been in that position, I probably would have said you were crazy. Just with everything I was going through, I didn't think it would come out of that. But yeah, I mean I'm really proud of the team. I wouldn't have been able to do any of that without the team, and I think to be an underdog makes it a lot easier the entire year. But yeah, I enjoyed my time there.
And did you come here with the mentality of, obviously you're still under contract with racing, so you're here just to get as many minutes as you can, hopefully build your confidence, because I guess if you're not playing back there, like if you're second or third choice as a goalkeeper, you need to still keep or get some sort of confidence from playing minutes. So was that your aim, was come here, do as best you can, and then go back a better person and goalkeeper?
Yeah, I think I had been through a lot the last year, and I think it was just finding my feet again. I knew I was always capable of it. It wasn't if it was going to come, it was when. And I think that my environment at Western United was like, from Mark, our GMs, our owner, they all really believed in me. And I think they saw it in me and believed in me, and that helped me believe in myself. It's always in the back of your head. But you can't think about that the entire time. So I tried not to think about it, but I knew that a lot of American goalkeepers, Jill Lloyd and Aubrey, have had success in Australia early on in their career, and they end up making the national team here. And that is a goal of mine. So I think seeing that, it was kind of like, all right, if I can do this, like I could give myself a good shot long term. But I think it was for me finding my confidence again. And I think I had the perfect setup from like top down. Our goalkeeper coach was great. My teammates were phenomenal for my confidence. So I think it was something that I had my eyes set on.
I think at any level, like whatever position, you need games. Like the more I speak to people, you know, through these interviews in the last few weeks, it's like they've left Australia to maybe go to Thailand or Malaysia because they just want to play in professional environments and get game time. And no doubt, like for yourself, as you say, it then gives you that confidence to come back now and really challenge. Is that your goal this year, really challenge for your first team spot at racing?
Yeah, I mean, it takes years as a goalkeeper here. I'm pretty young in terms of goalkeeper years. I'm 24. It takes, like, you hit your peak kind of at 27. It takes years to adjust to this league and earn enough time to get to the top and become a number one on average. I think it takes some goalkeepers 3 years, whether it be going abroad, whether it be building from within. Everybody's path is different. So I did know I needed to get experience. You can't go multiple years in a row without getting experience, and that's conversations my agent and I have continued to have, is like, gotta find ways to, or that's the conversation we had last year to get playing time. He said this is good for you. So I think, yeah, it is good. It's good for your confidence and experience in the long run as a professional, and just showing that you can do it, because it is a big jump from collegiate to professional. Showing that you can do it in games as a goalkeeper, it means a lot and goes a long way.
Yeah, because I guess with that keeper position, you mentally you have to always be on. Like, you can have a quiet game as a keeper if you're dominating a team, but you've got that one opportunity and you have to be switched on.
Yeah, for sure.
And moving back now to racing, probably touching on what you said there about the, like, a long-term goal. So I guess for you, you understand, and has that been drilled into you that from a goalkeeper point of view, but from becoming a top professional point of view, it does take time. So, you know, within yourself, you know that it's slow building blocks. You're not trying to get there tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that's another mental thing, is you got to take it like, I'm a firm believer in little things make big things happen. So it's, how can you get 1% better every day? And yeah, you do want to become a starter, but you can't set your goal on that if it's not going to be the year and say they have a number one. But you have to be able to push them and push yourself to get better and eventually get there. And so I think for me, that's something that I've had to learn, is like the mentality shift of, I went from starting every game in college to not playing and sometimes not even being in the squad here. And I've been on other teams with like youth national teams where I've been in that position, but I've always had a good, like a level head as to, okay, this might not be it, but like, how can I get better? And in this process, like, how can I benefit myself, but also push the team? And I think that's something big too. And in the long term, I think that helps you grow as a player. It pushes your teammates, and you're always going to get in a better environment with that.
And how do you, I suppose, not juggle those thoughts, but obviously football's a cutthroat business. And as you say, in America, it's a business. So is there that risk of if you're not playing, you can be released?
Yeah.
Versus, like, how do you balance that? You know, all right, I'm not playing, I need to be patient, but on the other side thinking I can't be too patient because I might end up, you know, out of a contract.
Yeah, you can't get yourself frustrated. I think you can set your goal on obviously being number one, but you can't get frustrated with it not happening. That is what it is, and, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. That's the thing, is it takes goalkeepers hit their peak way later than a field player, and it is harder for a goalkeeper to get minutes than a field player. So I think you do have to find a balance of, like, making sure you train well every day, but also making sure you fine-tune your game. So, like, I'll watch film with our goalkeeper coach. I'll be in the gym a little bit extra, making sure I'm on the field, just taking care of my body. And honestly, like, making sure my mentality is there, because those are little things that if you're not playing on the field, like, those are things that they can nitpick you or they can get you for. So you just have to make sure you give them every reason to keep you.
And if you come back with a stronger or a different mentality after your season in Australia?
Yeah, I think when you get minutes as a professional, as a goalkeeper, that's something that, especially with the way my season ended up being, I think it was, for me, it was like, oh, I can do this. I can keep up. Like, when I was down there, I did feel like I was on top of my game, and I came back here with a mentality of like, oh, I got this, versus I think last year as a professional, as a new professional, I was trying to just not forget to fill out my daily wellness or things like that. Like, but then I was also captain down there, so it was kind of external belief in me, and I think that helped me with my internal belief in myself and just finding myself again. And, you know, being in an environment where I wasn't really afraid to make a mistake down there, and coming back here being confident. And I also worked on things with my game down there that I knew I needed to work on from my experiences in training here.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It sounds like it was a very, very good move for you professionally.
Yeah, it was a great move. I mean, I tell a lot of people, like, that's something I'll look back on my career. I would have said you were crazy last year in the beginning of the year if I was going to Australia, but I'm so grateful for that experience.
And now what's the plan for this year? It's preseason. When does that kick
off?
Yeah,
so I'm back at racing. We're midst of our season, so I'm just focusing on that for now, and we'll see what's up next, but not sure yet.
How long are you under contract with racing?
Until December.
Now? Okay. And then if another move came up back to Australia, would you do it again? Is that an option?
Yeah, it's definitely it's still out there, but I don't know. I have to see what's going on here.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. And any other, like, obviously for yourself, the US is where you want to be, and you're obviously an American, but is there any other sort of dream destinations now that you've traveled and played abroad? Or is there any other country you think I'd love to go and play there one day just for an experience?
Yeah, my family is from Italy. Like, I'm a couple generations, like, down in Reggio Calabria. So I'd love to go play in Italy. I know my dad wants to travel there to see where his family's from. That would be really cool. And honestly, England would be really cool. I think that their league right now is pretty good, but I'm not opposed to playing overseas. I think while I'm young, and my parents can still travel as well, I think it's something you get to see the world while working, I guess. So that's something I'm not opposed to, but ideally, you know, one day I'd love to also be able to play close to home.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, one of the sort of, I guess, drivers behind this, you know, this podcast and these interviews is to show people that there are so many opportunities outside of your home country. Like, as much as you want to maybe be racing's first choice for the next 10 years, if it doesn't happen, and you've experienced it now firsthand, but there's so many options outside if you're willing to take that little bit of risk, you know, to do it. So many experiences that you could have.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really important, and I'm happy you're communicating that to your audience. Honestly, I think sometimes it's scary to take on these things, but there's some experiences like of a lifetime. Like, I get to tell my kids when I'm older. It's honestly a fun fact of mine now that I've lived in Australia for 7 months. But I think it's just something that's really unique we get to work, get paid to live in another country for just a year or two or whatever. And you get to explore a new culture, meet new people. And I think to just learn about yourself in your sport. Australian style play is way different than American style play. And I think it's something that's benefited my game.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. It's good that it has. And as you say, it's probably opened your mind now to anywhere in the world to go, you know what, I can move somewhere and go and play. And again, just pick up different experiences and maybe different skills.
Yeah, for sure.
And with the, just before we sort of close, do you think that the A-League women's, it's obviously getting better and better, and no doubt this World Cup's going to give it a huge shot in the arm, but do you think they're just behind in regards to professionalism just from an age point of view? Can you see it getting better and better for the local girls?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little behind. Maybe some of it is pay. But I think with the way the Matildas did in the World Cup, all eyes are going to be on this league this year, not just in Australia, but around the world, because most of the Matildas, I'm pretty sure, started in the A-Leagues. A lot of the U.S. national team players have jumped their careers in the A-League. So I think the A-League is honestly going to be a top league if there's salary cap. And I hope that people after the World Cup start to watch soccer, not just Australian football. And it's a great sport of the world. And to be able to, I think that's what kickstarted our 2015 World Cup, is what kickstarted our league here in the U.S. And I mean, I'm lucky the salary's gone up, and it's in the past 2 years, it's more livable. So I think it's just things like the Matildas run that's going to help kickstart that league.
Yeah, hopefully it'll entice maybe some internationals again, you know, from whether it's the US or the UK over to play here and just build that profile of the league around the world, as you say. Then you get Americans watching it, you'll get, you know, the UK people watching it, and hopefully it'll help it
grow.
Yeah,
for sure. I really hope that it does grow. I think like fan attendance is the most important thing to get behind teams, and that helps with the clubs and everything. So hopefully this year is a big year for it.
Yeah, no, I think it will be. And touching on your fan attendance, what sort of fan attendance do you get at your racing
games?
Yeah,
we just had a record crowd the other night. We had 10,500 people. So that's pretty good. I know Los Angeles has some of the best crowds, and they get like 23,000. And Portland is Soccer City USA. So they get, I think, average like 17,000 a year. They sell out their stadiums. But it's definitely grown. I mean, credits to our women's national team, 2015 and 2019 World Cup champions, and that really helps get our fans around the game. And we do have a pretty big population in America, so.
Yeah, no. The one in LA, is that Angel
yes,
City?
Yes, Angel City. And San Diego is actually up there with the attendance as well. They have a pretty good rivalry.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. It's good to see that it's growing there and like that. Hopefully, you know, our ladies game over here does the same thing.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is investment. A lot of teams have pushed marketing and everything of clubs, and I think that's how we've gotten our attendance on top of our national team performance.
Yeah. And that's, as you said, you touched on that earlier, that's your goal, is to get called up for the national team.
Yeah, that's my goal. It's always been my goal. I wrote it on a piece of paper in third grade that I wanted to be an Olympian, so we'll see.
Not long now. Fantastic. No, Hillary, thank you very, very much for your time today. I really appreciate your openness and sharing your story.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No problem. Speak soon.